When we last left our heroes, they had retrieved the Trident of Poseidon by storming the tower of the evil psych wizard Golofax and destroyed his ant-headed necrodemons. Adam White snatched the trident from the sorcerer's robotic claw while Halley Bullet provided cover fire and planted explosives under the wizard's attack cruiser. Their robot helper, PG-9, powered up the ship and John G surfed the internet. Having fled the assault on their starship, the intrepid Razor's Edge, our crew sped through the Gundaren cluster. With their pursuers now lost, our heroes decided to stop at a previously uncharted planet to rest and recover. Landing on Abraxas Prime, our heroes learned that the planet was filled with nothing but record shops. Adam and John rushed the nearest one. "Rare Jamaican 12-inch disco mixes," John declared. "Only $2.95 each. Wow! Limited press cassettes of Canadian bands that no one has ever heard," Adam shouted. "Number 7 of 15. Neato! There are even rarer records in the basement," the creepy gray-skinned shopkeep announced. "Deep in the basement. Much deeper in the basement." "Oh, boy!" Adam and John exclaimed in unison, darting to the basement door, shoving each other out of the way with every step. But before they could put their feet on the stairs, Halley grabbed each of their ears, pulling them back. "Something doesn't seem right here," Halley mused. "Let us go!" Adam and John exclaimed. "We want rare records! We hate you!" Despite the protests, Halley ate it by PG-9, pulled John and Adam back onto the Razor's Edge, and they sped away into the galaxy once more. Within moments, the rare Jamaican records and Canadian cassettes turned to sand. Indeed, Abraxas Prime wasn't a planet at all, but a gigantic living parasitic organism that fed on the desires of its prey. Now safely back in flight, our heroes set course for Nisutu, the home base of Osiris, who was eagerly awaiting the return of Poseidon's trident. Suddenly, the ship's klaxons cried out. Red lights flashed. PG-9 looked out the ship's port to see a ghastly sight. The fearsome, cybernetic, altered beast, terror of the cosmos, was ripping open the hull, seeking to recover the trident. "Ooh, dearie me," PG-9 cried. "My compute processor determines that surviving an encounter with the Alter Beast is 1 in 450,472. "Always tell me the odds," Adam White replied. "I'm a computer programmer, and I need to know these kinds of things." Halley Bullet said nothing, but powered up her plasma rifle and took aim at the bulkhead, awaiting the Alter Beast's entrance. John G called out, "I'm sure you guys have it under control," while reading Judge Dredd comics from his bunk. Will our hero survive the battle with the galaxy's most fearsome hunter? Find out today on Punk News Podcast, episode 462 of the Punk News Podcast! We're back. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. The adventure continues. And that was Halley Bullet. Halley Bullet, are you ready for today's cosmic LSD-drenched adventure?
Yeah, I'm like so stone cold in that story. I love it. I'm into it. I'm ready.
We're ready. And Adam White, are you ready to... Well, Adam, were you distressed when your rare Canadian cassettes turned out to be nothing but a sham projection created by a malevolent planet-sized predator?
That story was racist against gray-skinned record store owners.
It's true. It was. Anyways, welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. A couple of things we want to address. First of all, not a lot of, and we can just briefly address it to really dig into this. A lot of mail this week, so we'll get to that. Actually, let's get to the mail right now, and then we'll get into the day's topics. But a lot of good mail this week. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. This first letter is from a frequent writer, Biarte, and here's what Biarte has to say. And All right, here's what Biarte has to say. Hello from Norway. Hey, guys, what's up? Everyone will have to bear with me because my computer
is... pause for response? Hi.
My computer is loading the file, which I should... Here we go. Hey, guys, what's up? Thanks for reading my letter a few episodes back and for liking my idea about a mental health episode. Just thought I'd give you a heads up that my son and I have recorded and released our first song as a band. We are completed by two of his friends on bass and second guitar. We are now back in the studio to record our debut full length. Anyhow, our first song is part of a new Norwegian punk compilation LP featuring many great Norwegian bands. Our song was buried at the end, probably because it's too good. It's called Roland, and it is based off my brief encounter with Mr. Garfield in Oslo a few years back. I was in town for a spoken word show when I saw him in the corner of my eye as I was browsing through the punk and hardcore section in the vinyl store across the road from the venue. And just then, I reached the letter P and my old band, PKP's LP. I tried convincing Rollins to purchase it, as I knew he was probably looking for local stuff, but either I was too forward or he had a bad day or both, because he barely looked at me and said no, and then he hurried out of the store. So I thought, what was that all about? And I wrote a song about him. The state radio channel has already played it and talked about Rollins, so I thought you might be interested to hear it and maybe even play it. Meanwhile, here are a couple new punk jokes. How many punks does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
100. One to change the light bulb and 99 to call him a sellout. How many punks does it take to change a light bulb? Again.
How many?
100. One to change the light bulb and 99 to get on the list. That's a good one. As always, it is a pleasure listening to you guys, and I can't wait for the next band special. Have you considered NoFX? Well, Bjarte, thanks for writing in. I think we will play your song at our first break. We will play the band is called Bale Malert, and the song is called Rollins, and we'll play that in a couple of minutes. Meanwhile, we're going to read our next letter from a frequent reader and writer, Neil, Liverpool Neil. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here. Just wanted to drop a quick line to talk about a couple of things that you touched on in the last couple of podcasts. First, there was some talk about Rebellion Fest on episode 461. Adam seemed to be thinking that there was a huge turnout, which meant that more folks were going to punk shows in the UK than in North America. I don't think that's true. And in fact, the reason that Rebellion is so well attended is because it is seen as the yearly meeting point for older punks from all over the UK. In fact, some of them are, it's their only gig they go to all year. As Tom mentioned, there's a huge sense of community and camaraderie, something that is sadly lacking at most punk get-togethers over here. But again, it's mainly because the audience is older and they might only see each other once a year. And as for John's point about there being no younger bands there, well, there are, but in most fests here, they play earlier in the day on the smaller stages. And of course, they are mainly newer British punk bands, but some American bands do make it over. And I just wanted to reiterate my support of John's take on the recent Morrissey shows. I saw him at an outdoor venue in suburban Chicago, and it was superb. Unlike John's experience, here the lawn was full too, but it was a Saturday show, and I think lots of locals who have season tickets just went along because it's a pleasant Saturday and no one had any idea who Moz was. But the pavilion seats over 4,000 and it was packed full of Moz fanatics. The fables of disastrous ticket sales pushed by some members of the gutter press with an axe to grind just isn't true. He normally plays theater venues that are between 2,000 to 5,000 capacity, so he was never expecting to sell out a 10,000-plus venue. Ticket sales are just fine. And it just strikes me as funny that Moz can give an interview that goes on for pages and pages where he firmly says he has never voted and doesn't support any political party, but the gutter press will take one quote completely out of context and push it as their proof that Moz is racist. And then that fallacy is repeated ad nauseum until it becomes fact. His biggest crime, that he answers every question asked of him complete and honestly. The man is a true artist and is getting better with age. As always, stay free and keep up the good work from Liverpool, Neil. We got a couple more letters here. This one I've been holding on to for a couple of weeks. Hallie, you are the best. Thank you for bringing enlightenment to the admittedly lovable dunkheads on the podcast. I like John, Adam, Tom, and Ricky, and I like how they each have different opinions, but a fresh voice is great. Please be on more often. What is your favorite album of the year? What is a good show that I should go see? I just saw Bad Cop a few weeks ago, and they were great. Smart, poppy, sing-along, and they were so much fun. From Isabel.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, Isabel. I don't know if I can answer all those questions right now, right? My favorite album of the year? I don't know. I feel like I have to think about that. But yeah, that's awesome. I don't know how enlightened I am, but yeah, I mean, I love being in conversation with you guys and I love differences of opinion and yeah, I don't know. I'm into it. That's rad. That's nice to get that feedback.
Well, thank you for writing in, Isabel. Last one here is from Frank the Tank. Well, I don't think it's a famous football player, but maybe is. You've discussed it before and you'll discuss it again. Pete Townsend is definitely a child buggerer from Frank the Tank. So there you go. You can always visit podcast at punknews.org. A couple of things that we wanted to discuss. First of all, one thing I didn't want to mention is new. I don't know about Hallie and Adam. I don't know if you've had this thought, but man, like the past like month and a half, it seems like news has been really slow. Like there's been some cool tracks coming out, but nothing, no like crazy stories, nothing that's like super like, you know, moving the cultural consciousness, if you will. And my question is it us or is it them? Is that we're just missing what's hot right now? Or are things really just kind of slow right now, music news wise, or punk music news wise?
I mean, it could be that everyone got the message and stopped sexually assaulting each other for a month, and then all the stories that aren't just like routine tour stuff stories dried right up with that. I mean, I don't know. This stuff moves in rhythms, right? Like there's certain parts of the year where it's more it's more beneficial to be announcing and releasing new music, and I'm never. There's times where it's like really obvious that we're in that lull. Like you hit that in, you know, between like December and February usually, and then it picks back up as you get into, let's say like April, May, June, and then like I don't know if we're in another kind of like mini doldrum of stuff right now. But yeah, it has seemed a little pokey. Well, like before we do any of these shows, just to pull back the curtain, I mean, like John will go in and scour through the last week of what went on punk news and kind of cherry pick things that might be interesting to talk about. But a lot of it is just sort of like, you know, band releases their fourth music video from the last album that they had out or something like that. And they're just not, they're not incredibly, you know, conversation driving topics. There's nothing controversial about them for sure, which is probably why the last couple of shows have just been us talking about whatever the fuck that we want to talk about. So anyone tuning in for music news is going to be sorely lacking from those, but I don't know, John, we might just be in a lull. I mean, we went through this period where like all the news was horrible shit for like, just like humans being disgusting to each other in every which way, shape or form. Everyone, that or deaths, and it was just that constantly for a few months. So I'm okay to have a little bit of a reprieve from that.
Fair enough, Hallie. In your experience, has news been slow, or is punk news missing all the hot news items?
Well, you know, honestly, because I'm like a new parent, I feel like I don't get to stay on top of the news as much as I used to. And so I'm actually relieved to hear that maybe it's been slow, because maybe that means there's been less that I've been missing. That makes me feel good.
Fair enough.
Makes me feel less out of the loop.
When Adam first became a parent, he took a certain pride at not knowing what was going on, and I believe he's maintained that through till today. Yep. Hallie, are you happy not to be on the day-to-day goings on in general because you've got more pressing matters, or do you miss being, I guess, up to date CNN, Fox News wise?
I miss CNN, Fox News. I mean, honestly, I pay if I pay attention to any news, it is like politics news, and I wish that I would pay less attention to that and more attention to music news. I guess what I miss is like I miss just hearing more new music. I feel like actually maybe Isabel would give me some music recommendations, because I feel like that's the news that I miss. It's just like, I think there's a lot of good new stuff that comes out that I don't hear right now in the same way that I would have been on top of it before, you know?
Fair enough. Adam, I think you went to some, well, speaking of music news, Adam, and being a parent, I think you took your kids drinking last weekend, right?
Yeah, we did. And it was, it was a revealing weekend for me, and it is leading to more stuff in the immediate, and I'm pretty stoked about that. So we at Punk News and I guess we as in me at some party have been co-sponsoring for 2 years a this charitable fundraiser / music festival event that happens out near Ottawa, Ontario, in a little town called Van Cleek Hill. That's just near the border of Ontario and Quebec. And there's a brewery out there called Bose, like BEAU'S. And Bose does an Oktoberfest thing every year. And it's a weird hybrid event, because it has a bunch of different moods and scenes and brandings that all kind of converge on this thing, where on the one hand, it is it is, you know, a beer festival in that there is, you know, lots of tents where you can go and get beer and, you know, craft breweries that are, you know, hawking their wares and showing off what they do. And a big sort of main festival stage where let's say bigger bands are performing. But also everyone that runs Bose are all like 90s ska punk people from the Ontario scene. And while they don't flaunt that fact with the branding of the beer and all that, it absolutely comes out in this event, which is to say that there's a small stage that is adjunct to the main festival stage at this thing called the Black Forest stage. Now, Black Forest, they're going off like Oktoberfest Germany, the Black Forest, but Black Forest is written in the Black Flag font, like the font from like the MyWar cover, right? And it's just like a ton of small Ontario punk bands that are playing there. And there's this little punk stage, and that's actually what we sponsor. And right behind the stage, there's a bar and there's a half pipe. And there's skaters doing crazy shit in the half pipe all day long. And that stage in particular is raising money for an organization out of Ottawa called For Pivot's Sake, where they take like old skateboard equipment and refurbish it and rebuild it and like give it to these youth programs in the city. So there's that, but then also, so you have this like punk rock thing, you have this like German Oktoberfest thing happening, although the German Oktoberfestness of it is very much like the cartoon version of that, where, you know, a lot of people wearing like really goofy lederhosen and those German hats with like a feather in them, I don't know what you call them, those Robin Hood hats, right? And like a lot of that, but I doubt it's really authentic in anyone's mind. But also there's this big like farmer Aggie aspect to it, because Van Cleek Hill is a farm town. Like it is one street in the middle of a bunch of farms. So there's tractors and like farm dudes everywhere. And it is the strangest mix of people. So we went last year, and last year was the first time we sponsored it. And by we, I mean, like I went last year, photographed a bunch of bands, hung out for a couple of days, drank some beers. But then I realized that there was a ton of kids that were there, and they had a big, they had this whole barn that they had made into this kids area. And I was like, well, shit, man, if I'm doing this next year, I feel like I should like bring the whole family, because this is apparently like a thing that the whole family comes to. So we did. Now, there was a challenge to here, which is not really related to the festival or their fault if it was going to go bad, which was that it's like a 7-hour drive. So I've never traveled that far with like a 4 and a 6-year-old in my car before. But, you know, all things considered, they did okay with that. But then the festival was the interesting part, because I wasn't sure like what was going to happen. Like, are they going to be entertained? Are they going to have anything to do? Are they going to like sit around and watch mom and dad drink beer for 6 hours a day? Cause that might not be cool. And I've taken them, my daughter at least, to see, let's say like, I've taken her to see like a band, which is that like there was a band that we liked that was playing an outdoor event. And we went and she watched that, but she's too young to go to a club or anything like that and see the kind of stuff that I would go see if I'm going to a show. So she hasn't been exposed to a lot of that. So I didn't know how they were going to take that. But, you know, we went and we bought them those gigantic, like globe split in half shaped, you know, your
lawnmower muffs,
a lawnmower muff kind of things to have on their heads. And, you know, brought them out. They all the kids stuff went well. Like, you know, they were totally into all the stuff that was going on at the kids stage and all that. But I wasn't sure how they were going to interact with, you know, let's go stand around and watch, you know, punk bands play. And the kind of punk bands that ended up being booked on Black Forest, a lot of them were punk bands, were bands that were by no means cool in anyone's books, but were playing just like, you know, loud, fast, goony, you know, Ramones inspired, you know, denim and leather jacket kind of punk, right? You know, not indie rocky, you know, somewhere down the middle stuff, but you know, the kind of punk that like I feel like even the punk news audience would maybe be a little bit like, you know, have their nose up about, because it's not, you know, a lot of it wasn't trendy in any way. It was just like like loud, fast rock and roll stuff. But the kids were great. I had them right up against the stage for a lot of the time, like either my son on my shoulders or my daughter like standing right against the stage. All the punk guys and the skaters and everyone that was around were super accommodating to having these, you know, children basically running around at their ankles. And the kids really, really enjoyed it. And it was like the first time I've actually brought them out and had like exposed them to any of that music for any extended length of time. And it was great. Like the greatest compliment that I had from this was that they independently thanked me about this without being prompted, which is a major thing. Your progeny is super young, right? Like you're not even talking.
He's really little. He's 5 months old and he already has a pair of like those like headphone, but like ear protection muff things. Right. They're like my absolute favorite thing that he owns. But he's too young. I dragged him to Blondie and Elvis Costello and he slept through the entire thing. It was great. Yeah, he's too young to like run amok or have an opinion about any of it.
Right. But so on terms of having an opinion, most of my interaction with my kids is being like, did you like this thing that we did? And then trying to get an answer out of them. And that's mostly what it is. But they totally came up to me each on their own and unprompted and was like, we love Oktoberfest. This is great, Dad. And I was like, wow, okay. I'm not used to like unsolicited feedback from you guys. This is spectacular. It was a great event. They had fun. I had fun. It was very nice. There was a lot of, I feel like it's because it's the second year that I've done this. I got to see a lot of people that I hadn't seen I'd seen in the past that I'm starting to recognize. I was watching a band at one point and Steve Ademic from the Steve Ademic band, like ran up and gave me a hug and then ran away like a sprightly little forest creature. And I didn't see him again, but I was like, oh, that's nice. It's like I'm being recognized and people are saying hello. That's great. Now, but the one thing that really clicked in for me when I was watching this, and this is giving me pause because I don't know what I'm supposed to believe anymore, is we were talking on the last few episodes of this show. John, are you eating a bag of chips?
Am I eating a bag of? No, I'm
you're, make, I'm you're making eating these. A bag of chips noises. As we were talking on the last episode of this show with Tom, how apparently like I'm all fucked up and I can't listen to anything that doesn't sound like, I don't know, like lo-fi garbage that's recorded in a can anymore. And that I think that is still for the most part true. But what I realized is that seeing bands live, which is to say seeing bands that, you know, that probably sound more like a shitty lo-fi garage recording than not, I appreciate their stuff way more. And I don't understand this. So there are, say, three or four bands that played this thing that I was aware of and, you know, I'm going to say liked, like with big quotes around it, because like I'd heard their recorded stuff. At the point when I heard the recorded stuff, you know, I nodded along and I was like, oh, this is cool. I like this. But like, I got to admit, like I didn't go back to it a whole hell of a lot. Right. Like you experience that all the time, right? You go listen to some band and you're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. But it doesn't become your like daily go-to revisit kind of thing. But right. I'm watching these bands play live and I'm like, I'm so into all these bands. I don't think it's just because I'm kind of drunk right now. It's like, I'm actually really into what they're all doing. And I think it's that I have this total aversion to like a band sounding cleaned up, like sounding like produced. It just doesn't work for me. And so like, just
Adam, is your revelation that you like live music?
I like live music from bands that I would normally ignore on recording. I mean, and I'll list them here because they all deserve people to go check them out anyway. So, you know, like there, Lost Love is a band from Montreal. They just had a record come out on Stomp called Good Night Roscoe or something like that. The Penske File out of Burlington, that's like a pretty big punk news band these times. The Penske File play everywhere. They're road warriors. They're touring all the time. But their last record, Salvation, was super polished, like really, really, really clean and big. And, you know, then this is a band that writes anthems. So all their stuff is like just, you know, fist in the air, arena ready kind of stuff. And that's how it sounds on record. And just like, you know, I listen to one of those songs and I go like, oh, that's a really well-written song, but I never go back to it. Right. Mobina Galore out of Winnipeg. You know, I've heard a lot of their stuff as it's popped up, but again, it's not a band that I've been revisiting a whole hell of a lot. And then Pale Lips, who closed the first night, that who are this like wonderful like punk and roll kind of how do you describe Pale Lips? Like they play a lot of Ramonesy stuff. They play a lot of stuff that has this like a total like throwback Chuck Berry kind of vibe to it. Like really trad rock and roll version of punk rock. And I'd heard their stuff too, but it seemed when I was listening to it on a record, I'm like, okay, I get it, but it's, you know, it's kind of lightweight. So I'm not, you know, I'm not listening to it every day, but like all four of these bands, I'm watching them live and I'm like, these bands are amazing. And like all their stuff is great. And I'm all super into it. And I think it's just that, like, I just don't have an ear for someone's properly recorded studio shit anymore. It's like, I want to hear the band when like they're kind of roughed up and sound like garbage. That is my, you know, that's my thing. So I think it's just like, yeah, like live is what I want, I guess. Like live is what my brain craves. So it is an interesting revelation there, because then now I'm thinking back and I'm like, are there other bands that I've just kind of like written off or just filed away that I should totally be more into?
Adam, you'll never know. Maybe Matt Toka was amazing and you'll never know.
I have no idea. Also, I'm a dumb coward part of this story. The one headliner on the main stage at the show was New Pornographers, which is a band that is incredibly important to me in my development of being a person that listens to more than less than Jake. So, so like Master Manic in, what was it, 2002 or whenever that came out, right? It was like a total, like it was like a thin edge of the wedge kind of record for me, where all of a sudden I went from just listening to all this skate punk and ska and everything that I was listening to, and just like expanded my whole universe into everything, into all sorts of other things. So they headlined
me. That album was a huge game changer for me too. That's like cool to hear you say that. That album in particular, it was just like,
it's when incredible. It came out, it's still incredible, know, yeah. Right? So
yeah.
So we stayed in a hotel in a little town called Hawkesbury, which is just near, right in the border of Ontario and Quebec. It's the only hotel that is in the area. And most of the people that are coming or going to this Oktoberfest thing bus in from either Ottawa or Montreal, because it's about an hour away from both of them. So, and the event runs all the buses for it. Or there's people that camp there. So there's one little hotel that's in the area. It's mostly booked up by the festival organizers itself. And so I was in there because I was one of the sponsors, but also all the bands were in there. So we came out, my son and I came out to like load up our car to go home on Sunday morning. And standing around at their van discussing where they're going to go get breakfast is like all of the New Pornographers, like not Nico because she wasn't there, but the rest of them, right? Okay, not Dan either, if we want to be really specific, but right. So Carl Newman and everyone else, right, are all standing around trying to decide where to go for breakfast. And I'm standing there sort of like slack jawed, like, oh shit, there's AC Newman. I should go say something to AC Newman. But then I had this, you know, my kid's trying to like run away in the parking lot. And I have this moment where I'm like, it's 8 a.m. They played yesterday. They're discussing where to get breakfast. Like AC Newman doesn't want to talk to me about how Mass Romantic changed my life. Like I should probably leave him alone. And I regret that right now. I'm sitting here right now and I'm like, why did I not go talk to AC Newman? Jesus Christ. So yeah. So I don't know. The moral of the story is if you see AC Newman, you should go talk to him and not run away starstruck.
That's really funny because I actually have a story that's like the opposite experience, where I saw Scott from Frightened Rabbit out at a bar. And like there, the Frightened Rabbit album, like Winter of Mixed Drinks, like means a lot to me. That album like got me through like an incredibly like challenging time in my life. And I decided that it was important enough to me to go say something to him about it. And it was just like, you know, it was spontaneous. I just walked up to him. I hadn't really thought about how to word like what I wanted to say. And it was so important to me. And I like couldn't really come up with like, I felt like I sounded so dumb trying to like talk to him about it just at a bar, you know, I'm like, I regret talking to him about it. I wish that I had just like looked at him and been like, ah, there's a person I really admire and I really admire his music and I'm lucky to be in the same room with him. And I wish I had just left it at that.
Well, see, that makes me feel better because I'm like, I'm looking at this guy and I'm like thinking, okay, you're probably one of the best songwriters in indie rock right now. Or like in the past decade, like, I don't know exactly what I'm going to say to you, but it might be stupid. Like, I don't want to go up and like, and I don't know, be like, Carl AC, like bungle over whatever his stage name is. And then, I don't know, you tell him that like, I love some song that turns out to be like a Dan Bayar song. then, right. Like so I don't know. I didn't know what to do. So I just left it at that. And now I'm like, that's my chance. I'm not going to talk to AC Newman again. He doesn't want to talk to me. So anyways, we'll move on. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song from Lost Love, a band out of Montreal. So the album that they had come out last year on Stomp was called Good Luck, Rasko. The song I'm going to play is called John Wayne Gretzky. This band has all of the qualities.
Is Wayne Gretzky's first name John?
No.
Oh.
They're playing on the serial killer or whatever he is.
Oh, well, because, you know, John Wayne, what's his name? I mean, John Wayne the actor, but then John Wayne Gacy is named after John Wayne the actor.
Oh, no, I think they're going on John Wayne Gacy there. But in any case, so here's the song.
John Wayne's an actor, don't you, Adam?
Yeah, I know John Wayne the actor.
Just checking.
I didn't know that what is it? Was he a serial killer or an assassin? I'm never sure.
John Wayne Gacy was a serial killer that killed kids, and he was a clown. He did kids' parties as clowns, and he painted pictures of himself as a clown, and he probably the creepiest serial killer ever.
All right, yeah. I don't know why I asked that, because I don't know where I was going with that. Here's the thing about Lost Love. We've talked a lot about how much of a flaming disappointment Weezer seems to be in our lives these days. The first Weezer record had this ability to write these big, giant, goofy, bright pop songs that they have never recaptured in a way that wasn't silly or goofy or underlying, you know, them being a joke rock band or whatever it is that they do now. But Lost Love has that initial, like, untarnished Weezer quality. So they are a pop punk band. This is going to be the poppiest song I've played on this podcast in a long, long time. But they have whatever intangible quality it is that early Weezer stuff had. So here you go. And in a better world, one of these songs would be a hit. So this is John Wayne Gretzky. From Lost Love, from their record of last year, Good Luck, Rasko. Here we go.
I'm running out of time to say goodbye. I'm running out of jokes to make you smile. And I fix my goals when I'm fucking high. So I'll never reach them, never get hurt. I'm never running out of things to do. Cause if I did, I'd have too much time to think about what makes me wanna die. My feet sit right here until the flames fix my heart.
And we are back, and that was Lost Love. And let's jump into El Nuzo. Here's an interesting story. Over the past 3 years, Tom DeLonge of Blink-182, or formerly of Blink-182, he's got this, quote, academy called To the Stars. And it's an actual academy that they accept money and they employ people, and they're looking for proof positive of UFOs. So over the past 3 years, they've been releasing videos of unidentified flying objects. And before we go any further, it's important to note, unidentified flying objects doesn't necessarily mean alien or extraterrestrial. It literally, and I'm just pointing this out just so people know, it literally means an object that has not been identified as to its origin. So it could be a weather balloon, like they always say. It could be a Russian jet. It could be a bird. It could be ink on the lens of the camera. Who knows? Anyways, over the past 3 years, Tom DeLonge's To the Stars Academy has been releasing several videos of UFOs, of course, saying, here it is, here's some aliens. Well, as it turns out, the Navy finally responded to videos leaked by Tom DeLonge, and they said, yes, they are videos of UFOs. However, we have not actually identified what they are. The Navy spokesperson, Joe Gardisher, here's what he said. He said that they are unidentified aerial phenomenon. However, the Navy has not publicly released characterizations or descriptions, nor released any hypothesis or conclusions in regard to the objects in the contained reference videos. This is all about frequent incursions into our training ranges by UAPs. Those incursions present a safety hazard to the safe flight of our aviators and the security of our operators. So, for one, the federal government is responding to videos leaked by Tom DeLonge, agreeing that it is, to at least some degree, it is what he says it is. Hallie Bullitt, do ye think that the federal government protests too much, and has Tom DeLonge finally done what we were all laughing at him for the past 15 years about?
Yeah, like I saw, I got so excited about these videos. Like I had to rush through like looking at what the other topics were that we were going to be talking about, because I spent so long looking at these videos and being like incredibly excited about them. I mean, I'm not saying they're aliens. I don't know if they're aliens, but like they're cool. These videos are so worth watching just to like hear pilots who like are fly all the time and see lots of other things that are flying. Like just to hear them be like, what is that, dude? Bro, like, what am I looking at? Like, it's so cool. It's so fun. And I was actually on a podcast episode where we talked about this whole project of Tom's, and like we, you know, basically discussed whether it was like, you know, evidence of his, you know, sadly being like kind of cracking up. But this is like, again, I'm not saying it's aliens, but like this is legit. I don't know how he got these videos. I don't know how he ended up being the one that like declassifies them, but like I think this is like incredibly cool and very validating for whatever his like mission statement is for this organization. I thought this was like really fun and funny, and like there are two of the videos, one called Gimbal and one called Go Fast, and I probably watched each of them like a dozen times. I thought this was awesome.
Allie, should we be concerned for Tom DeLonge's safety, do you think?
You think the government's going to go after him?
Listen, we've all been laughing at him, and the government hasn't been stopping us from laughing at him. But who's having the laugh right now? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like he's on to something. Because what are these things? Like if pilots don't know what they are, like what are they? Like even if they're drones, they're like some fancy, crazy kind of drone that like we didn't know existed. So it's like it's at the very least evidence of probably some technology that we're like as just the general public that we're like not aware of. So yeah, and the government clearly is like seeing these videos and they're not making these videos available to the public. So yeah, maybe are they going to go after them? Is this stuff they don't want us to know?
It is pretty creepy that like these fighter pilots, which you would think have seen everything.
Yes.
Like, what is that? You know, it's
so
like
so fun. It's so cool to hear them be so like excited and amazed by something.
Adam, are you going to donate to Tom DeLonge's To the Stars Academy now?
I will tell an analogous story to what I think is going on here. So we had a dog, and the dog used to go into our yard, and he became a digger. We didn't think he was going to be a digger, but he started digging up the lawn, and it seemed a little bit harmless at first. He was just being a dog and he was bored, I guess. And you know, it was our fault that he was digging. Like we could have been walking him at the time, but he was digging. And then one day he was digging where he usually digs. And the motherfucker found a ball. Like a red ball in the earth. And it was not a ball that we gave him or a ball that he put there. He was just digging and he found a fucking ball. And in his little dog brain, that was validation of every clump of dirt that he had ever moved. Is that you will dig and there will be toys in the ground. And then from that point forward, the dog was ruined because he was just digging all the time because there was a ball. And that's all I have to say.
Well, speaking of conspiracy theories, The Offspring are now in a video game. You can go log into the video game. It's called World of Tanks, and you can go to an area in the video game, and you can watch Offspring play a pre-recorded live concert. People did not seem excited by this. Do you guys think that this is the future of music, that you'll have to go online to see a band play live? Or is this just some novelty that no one really cares about? Tellingly, Offspring is not the first Tron-type band. Previously, Korn were in a video game called Adventure Quest 3D and Adventure Quest World, and you could go watch Korn online. Is this cool and interesting, or is this kind of a watering down of what should be an organic and interesting and actually live thing? Or is this story just stupid and boring and no one cares?
Do we have footage of this?
I didn't look. I should have seen if I could find a YouTube video of it, you know?
I really want to see what do I got. Hold on, here. I think I found the YouTube. Here, I'm going to watch the YouTube video of this as we are. Wait, here, let's see what happens. Oh, no.
Well, maybe we'll come back to it. Let's talk about
this. Oh, no, John.
You can just watch it. Wait. So you can just watch it on YouTube? You don't have to go into the video game?
Someone has screenshotted this. All right, this is great.
Got it.
Here, all right, so they're playing All I Want, and
are they animated characters, Adam?
They or are it like a live animated video? Characters, or at the very least, they mocapped the band actually playing the song. They are on a giant, ridiculous, Woodstock 99 style stage. I don't see any tanks, so I don't get what. Oh no, here you. Oh, they have a set list on the side. They play "Pretty Fly for a White Guy," "Gone Away," "All I Want," "The Kids Aren't All Right," and "You're Gonna Go Far, Kid." At least that's what's listed here on the screen. I don't see how this intersects I imagine World of Tanks has tanks in it.
What if the game was actually like Burger Time, you know, like you had to make burgers, but it's just called World of Tanks.
I'm picturing like Gary Coleman on The Simpsons, and he's like fishing around in his bucket, and he's like, "Galaxy of Prawns," right? There's no actual. So I don't know. I don't see any. I don't see any tanks in this video. I was expecting to take the commercialism out of it, because I don't really know how much of a market there is for you to be the Offspring in a video game at this point in their career. But if I was offered to be in a game called World of Tanks and to have my likeness digitized, I would expect there to be some fucking tanks, and I'm not seeing any in this at all. They've animated like Dexter looks like Max Headroom, and it might just be because like he has like animated bleach blonde hair that doesn't move. It's. I don't get it. I don't get it.
John, I don't know. I think it's like kind of fun and cool, right? I don't know. They can play in a video game if they want. Who cares? The only thing I was going to say was like, I just felt bad for like really, really, really hardcore Offspring fans who were going to have to figure out like how to get this video game and like get into the place in the world in the video game where you can actually see the Offspring play. But if you can just also watch it on YouTube, then I have no problem with this.
Like, presuming that in World of Tanks, you drive a tank. despite your love of the Offspring, is not like the first thing that you would do when you encounter them playing on a stage would be to shoot them? Because like that's like regard, like I could be the world's biggest Offspring fan, but if I was cruising around in a video game in a tank and I pulled up to an inexplicable Offspring concert, I would, it would take me like 9 seconds of pausing and being bewildered before I just started lobbing explosives at them. But that's not what the person is doing in this, this YouTube video. So I don't get this game.
Oh, I want to know if that's an option though. Do you get to just completely, like if you choose, you get to just wreak havoc on the concert? That would be amazing.
You're driving the tank like up onto the stage.
Yes.
Well, listen, speaking of people that love violence, Glenn Danzig is working on a new movie. His last movie was called Satanica. Was it called Satanica? What was the last movie called? Veronica. His last movie is called Veronica, and it was three sexually erotic horror films put together, and that was Veronica. Well, he's got a new one coming out, and it's a spaghetti western erotic horror, and the movie's about sexy vampire women in the Old West that go around killing people. And listen, everyone knows I'm a Danzig mega fan. Misfits, Samhain, Danzig. It's without question some of the greatest music I've ever made, without question. And his movie did not get good reviews at all. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment. But from what I've read, apparently it's basically softcore porno. So the question is should people get it? A, is Danzig kind of like damaging his legacy? Because, I mean, the dude's like 65 or 64 or 63. At this point, he kind of should be like, you know, solidifying his legacy if that's something you care about. Some artists don't care about their legacy, which is kind of cool too. Or is he the true artist because he's doing what he wants? He's doing softcore cowboy horror porno. And that's what he wants to do. So he's a true artist, you know, like he's not letting the market dictate what he should do. He's doing what he wants to do. You know, there's a lot of ways you can take this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I like didn't see the first movie. I'm now so totally intrigued because everything that I read about it just makes it sound like it is such a, like, just like garbage on fire. It sounds like it's unintentionally hilarious because it's so like, not just bad, but like badly made. This made me laugh. This one blogger said, even ignoring the aggressive sexism, unintentional humor, and watered-down stories, Veronica's gross incompetence in the basic mechanics of film creation makes it an utter failure. It was just like, to hear how people were writing about this online was like truly amusing. It didn't really make me want to see it, though. But I don't know. I mean, the last time I tried to see Danzig play, he had like a hissy fit on stage. He marched off to his trailer. Everyone stood around for like 20 minutes, like wondering if he was going to come back or not. It was like completely ridiculous. It sort of sounds like, I mean, I don't know what you can say about his legacy at this point, because there is, you're right. The music's amazing. The music's completely amazing. But he at this point, I think, has become like a little bit of a laughable figure. No,
I would agree. Factually, he has become a laughable figure. I would disagree on whether or not that is just or not, based on two things. The first thing I would base that on is that I think Danzig's I've said this before. Most, not all, but most, you know, next level artists, like truly, truly great artists, are weirdos. Jello Biafra, weirdo. Darby Crash, weirdo. Tumata Duplenty, weirdo. Danzig, weirdo. And so you got to give him some free. Freddie Mercury, weirdo. You know, so, yeah. I mean, Freddie Mercury had like 8 cats in his house, and he would call his house and talk to his cats. You know, and I'm not just Freddie Mercury. I think Freddie Mercury is cool as hell. I'm just saying he's weird. And so I think you got to give an artist some, not unlimited free passes. But I think when you're Danzig, maybe he has a hissy of running soup. He gets a free pass here and there because he's done so much incredible stuff. And you don't know everything that's going on in somebody's life. Maybe he's having a really bad day. You don't know. You don't know. Like when he played Newark, his mom literally died that morning and he still played Newark. So should we weigh that against him, you know, having a hissy fit over onion soup? Maybe, you know, I don't know. The other thing and is, you know, people are making fun of Danzig because, you know, he likes Japanese comics. He likes his cats. You know, that's the guy like Danzig would never admit this, but I'm a nerdy guy. He's a nerdy guy. He likes nerdy stuff. He likes nerdy comic books. He likes nerdy movies. you know? And so all his life, he's a short guy, which, you know, when you're short, life's harder. That's the truth, you know? When you're an uggo like me, life's harder, you know what I mean? And so all his life, he's had people picking on him. So he's had to develop this exterior. No, I'm not a nerd. I'm a tough guy that, you know, has sex with strippers, you know? That's what I am. I'm cool. And people are like if you saw high schoolers at high school saying, you're a nerd, you like stupid comic books, you say, man, I feel really bad for that kid. But when people do it to Danzig, everyone's like, oh, that's hilarious, you know? Danzig's just kind of a nerdy guy's into nerdy stuff, and that's one of the things that makes him so great. So I don't think making fun of him in many cases is justified. That being said, his movies, I haven't seen the movie. I'm pretty sure it's pretty bad, but I'm going to open up mine, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty bad. A couple of weird things is, they're porno or soft porno. I always kind of find it kind of like, all right, so let's say Danzig likes porno. He obviously does. I don't know why you'd want to film a porno, because it's like you and like 35 other people like watching a porno together, which is kind of weird. You know what I mean? And like doing take after take. It's like there's a difference between watching it and like making it. You know what I mean? I like a turkey, but cooking a turkey is a pain in the ass. You know what I mean? But of course, I guess if you cook a turkey and you eat it, then it's tastier. So maybe there's that. Anyway, another thing that I want to point out though is, and I was going back and forth on this. Danzig loves strippers, man. I mean, he loves strippers probably more than any other artist there is. In every single Danzig photo, not every single, but in almost every single Danzig photo shoot, and pretty much every Danzig album since Danzig's self-titled 1988, there's been pictures of him with strippers, and he's got a taste, man. He likes, he likes the curvy strippers with the big bosoms. He loves it, you know? And it's like Danzig, you're like 35 or 40 or 50, it's like, you've kind of got the mentality of like a 12-year-old, and they're like, yeah, you know, hot stripper, hanging out with strippers is awesome. It's like, well, you're paying them to be there. Like when you're 12 and you see a guy, or 14, you see a guy with a stripper, you're like, oh man, he's so cool, he gets all the hot chicks. But when you're like 25 or 30, 35 like me, it's like, well, they're there because he's paying him to be there. Like, that doesn't mean you're cool. It means you're paying women to spend time with you, which is kind of not cool. You know, it's like you can't do it. You can't get women to hang out with you without paying them, which is weird, you know. But on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, if I'm really progressive, then he's sex positive. Like, you know, if you're really progressive, then you're a pro-sex worker. So maybe Danzig is pro-sex worker, and he's more progressive than anybody. You can take this in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I wish I hadn't read that his movie like contains what's been described as aggressive sexism. I wish he could find a way to like make up for his shortness or prove that he's cool in a way other than aggressive sexism. But you know, what can you do?
Dennis, you bring up a great point. Is that like, so it's not 1983 anymore. It's not 1980, right? No. Like, Danzig's proved that he's cool over and over and over. Like, Danzig's done way more cool stuff than, like, anybody on the podcast ever, you know, except for Hallie, because Hallie's cool. But the point being is, like he's got nothing to prove, so why is he still trying to prove it? You know what I mean? Like he's Danzig. Like, he just like Nick Cave is cool as hell, right? And Nick Cave just walks in the room and says, I'm Nick. Or Iggy Pop. No one's cooler than Iggy Pop. Iggy yeah. Pop just kind of walks in, and everyone's like, oh, my God, it's Iggy Pop. And he's like, yes, I am. Or David Bowie, you know what I mean? But like, Danzig's still trying to prove that he's Danzig. But he don't need you, Danzig. You're beautiful as you are. You don't need to impress us. We're already impressed, Danzig. I'm a fan. I'm not dissing you, Danzig. I'm just saying, we're all thrilled with you. Can you be thrilled with you?
John, you're really worked up.
Danzig's a man, and I don't like people picking on him. But that being said, he's not an infallible deity. He's made a few missteps here or there, but when you're a great artist, that's what happens. I'm going to watch this movie. I'm sure it's really bad, but I wish you could make an awesome movie. But on the other hand, just because you make awesome music doesn't mean you can make awesome movies. It's really two different – even though it's all creative, like it's two different things. Unless you're Marissa Paternoster. If you're Marissa Paternoster, you can do whatever. You can do art. You can do music. You can sing. You know. But if you're not Marissa Paternoster – both short Italians, mind you. Danzig and Marissa Paternoster. So anyways, let's see. We're going to do a little sad story here, and then we'll play a song and come back and do a few more news stories. Larry Wallace has passed away. Larry Wallace, in the States, people might not know him as much as in the UK. Larry Wallace is a pretty important musician. He was in the Pink Fairies, which is an extremely important proto-punk band. He hung around with Twink and Mick Farren and like all of that early like acid Hawkwind, early Pink Floyd. That whole crew, Pink Fairies, Deviants, Larry Wallace is in that crew. He's on a couple of Pink Fairy records. And also, he was in the very first version of Motorhead, the very first Motorhead album, which actually wasn't released until the third album, which is called On Parole, which I like a whole lot. It sounds a little different than the rest of the Motorhead albums. He's the original member of Motorhead, and was interesting in the press. They were kind of like saying, oh, he's important because he was one of the original Motorhead guys, which is true. But I think he's more important as a Pink Fairy or as a Deviant, you know, or as a producer for Stiff Records. A lot of those are on Stiff Records recordings. He's there. Elvis Costello, Nick Lowe. Who's hit me with the rhythm stick? That guy. Whoever that guy is. Hit me with the rhythm stick. Like, he produced some of that. So anyway, Larry Wallace is cool as hell. And Hallie or Adam, I don't know if you have anything to add.
And the Blockheads, but yeah.
That's it. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have anything to add or if we should just play a Larry Wallace track.
Let it rip.
Let's play Police Car, which is what was cool about the Deviants and the Pink Fairies is they're proto-punk. They're before punk kind of even was thought about as a thing. And then when punk came along, they did the smart thing and they're like, we're proto-punk, so now we're just going to play punk because we were here 5 years ago. So this is Larry Wallace doing Police Car, which is a punk track coming from the perspective of a proto-punk guy. And then after that, we're going to play another track. We're going to play Bjarte, his family band song, too. So we're going to play two songs in a row. We're going to play Larry Wallace doing Police Car, and then we're going to play Bjarte from Norway's track by his family, and we'll be back.
We'll be right back.
self-contempt. It's gotta be fake, and I know that you're feeling all alone. So Henry Rollins, don't you worry. Up your ass, we're both grown up now, we're both big boys. It's okay to weep, to cry a little more, but I know that you're feeling all alone. So Henry Rollins, don't you worry.
And we're back, and that was Larry Wallace and Bjarte's band. Thanks for writing in, Bjarte, and thanks for sending us music. I saw another band from Scandinavia send us a song. We're going to play that next week or the week after. We haven't forgotten about you. We're going to get to that, too. But we've been getting a lot of email lately. Let's hit some more news stories. Let's see here. Mike Watt and Todd I can never pronounce his name. Todd Congillier have a new band. And we talked about this band before. It's called the Jumpstarter Plowhearts. Adam, White, and I debate on whether or not that's a good band name. Adam said it was a great band name. I said it was kind of a terrible band name. Then Adam countered, it's a great band name for a band that one is not planning for lasting a long time, to which I agreed. You kind of don't want to waste a great band name on a temporary band, if you will. They released their first track through Punk News. We debuted it. The track was called On the Counter. And I got the new record out on Todd's Recess Records, and the band is, here's the idea. Mike Watt said Todd Congillier, a bunch of bass tracks. Todd built the rest of the track on top of that using a variety of different drummers, including George Hurley of the Minutemen, the drummer from Neighborhood Brats, Jimmy Felix from Toys That Kills, Patty Schemmel from Hole, and a whole bunch of other people. I was really surprised by this track, in that I thought this track friggin' ripped.
Yeah, this is cool. I'm into this. Kudos to you for having us be the premiere of this. Like, I don't care too much about being premieres or like being the publication that premieres something. But you know, if we can premiere like new Mike Watt material, like that's pretty rad. So good.
That is very cool.
Yeah, good job. If that was you that made that happen.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but this is great. This is fun and fast and you know it's. It's two great flavors together, and I'm all about it.
Yeah, I like it too. I'm super into it. And I like that, I like that it's this like San Pedro based, right? Cause like, I feel like Mike Watt like put San Pedro on the map, like music wise. And so I like that he's collaborating with Todd Conch, cause I feel like he's totally picked up that, like, I mean, he's the reason that San Pedro like music scene is awesome right now, or Pedro, but you know, it's I like that. I think this is very, very cool that they're doing shit together.
A lot of these kind of throw off bands or put together bands or even high concept bands, in that we're not going to record as a normal band, we're going to do some weird thing. A lot of times, feel free to disagree with me, either of you, but to me, like, a lot of the concept bands just kind of sound like interesting, but not good. Like, you're like, oh, this is an interesting sound, but I'm not going to rock it. This freaking rocks. You think it's just like Lucky Chance, you know?
I don't know. I sort of... No, I don't know. Adam, do you have a thought on that?
I think that might just be the mix. Like, I would attribute that by mix, I mean, like, the people involved, not the audio mix. Because, like, I feel that, like, because if it was Mike Watt and many other people, it would be an interesting but ultimately just bewildering thing. Todd is bringing a little more of, like, the kind of, like, straight ahead Toys That Kill style punk rock into this, and I have to imagine that he's probably the one that is grounding these things more as real songs than just experiments. Because you figure like a guy like Mike is he is like a careerist musician who is creating a ton of stuff, and just by the sheer volume of the stuff that he's putting out, you know, a lot of it's going to be experiments and weird ideas and stuff like that. Whereas it's just my read on Todd is that he's a little bit more of a traditional band kind of person. So he's probably looking at it from that standpoint, but I don't know. That's speculation.
Well, let's hit two more cool tracks. I'm going to swap them because I think Hallie is going to carry us out with the last one. So Tsunami Bomb, they've released their first new song from the new album. It's their first new album, and I think, is it like 13 years? It's their first new album in a long time. Of course, the new album features original members, Dominic Davi and Oubliette. They've got a new singer, Kate Jacoby, and a couple other new and kind of members that have been in their orbit. The new track is called The Hathors, of course, an homage to ancient Egyptian mythology. Two questions. First is, did you guys like the track? Second question is, Tsunami Bomb has perhaps the unenviable task of replacing not the first singer, not the second singer, but the third singer, but also the most well-known singer. Do you all think that can ever be overcome? And does Tsunami Bomb have the tools to take to do it, to fix it, to keep it trucking along?
I was not a huge Tsunami Bomb fan. I would say I'd prefer to hear Emily Whitehurst singing, but I think it's awesome when people keep making music. I don't know. I feel like a broken record. I always say that on this podcast, but I really feel it. Like, I think it's great that they made this. It's maybe not my thing, but I feel like if you're like a big Tsunami Bomb fan and you've just been missing that music, like, I think that this should be exciting to you. I think.
Well, I agree. And what I like about the new band or the old band is that it's actually the OG band. What a lot of people don't even realize is that, like, the original version of the band was Dominic Davi, Oubliette, and a couple of other people. And I think that's cool that it's the original band is back together. And I think that's a good way to view it. And I don't have any connection to old Tsunami Bomb, because I had heard of them, but I never really checked them out. And so I just dig this on its own merits. I mean, I think it's pretty cool. I think it's good.
I think if they were a bigger band than they were, they might have more pushback about a change of vocalists. Even putting aside that it's a change back to the original vocalist, but they were never huge, and the people that are checking them out now based on name recognition have got to be like a certain level of diehard that are fairly informed about what's going on. And I can't imagine them giving all that much flack to this project. Like, you figure if they were bigger, they would have attracted more like casual listeners that might have more of a, I don't know, like a less charitable opinion to the band changing things up. So I don't know. They seem like the right size of act to keep it going like this.
Well, speaking of bands that are keep it going, here's a band that's reverting to not its first incarnation, but its perhaps most well-known incarnation. Vivian Girls are back after 8 or 9 years of being away. it's, well, I guess eight years or 7 years. No, actually, it's five years of being away, but 8 years since their last album, or 7 years since their last album. Vivian Girls are back. The new album is called Memory. It's out now. They put out a new video. I think everyone knows. Well, I'll tell you my opinion. It's great. It's fantastic. I've been a Vivian Girls fan since the first album. I think they're awesome. I think no one makes the kind of music they make. I think they've got a certain melancholy, but harmony, and sometimes a positive outlook. But I just love how heavy they sound, but how energetic. And it's not like a Black Sabbath heaviness. It's like a cosmic heaviness that just rumbles through. And I think Vivian Girls are great. And I'm so happy they're back. And I think they're great. And we've touched on this before, is even I've fallen into this trap, is almost all the press focuses on Vivian Girls were a band that everyone was excited about. Then press got mean and press got sexist and they broke up. Aren't we glad now that we're in a different time that, you know, you can't be a mean sexist journalist now, which is, you know, which is good. And mm-hmm. Vivian Girls are back. But here's the question, is the story of Vivian Girls that the people were mean to them? Or is the story of Vivian Girls that they're an amazing band? Oh, and one of the footnotes is that people were mean to them. You know, like, I don't know if the main talking point should be that people were mean to them. I think the main talking point should be, and that maybe I'm wrong, but I think the main talking point is they're an amazing trio that made amazing, unique music, which no one had ever heard anything that sounded like this before.
I mean, I think their story should be about them and them being super talented and making music that people love. But if we learn a lesson about, like, I think you're right. I think, like, it's good that whatever treatment they got in the press, I don't think that would be happening now. And, like, if we learn a lesson that we're like, if you're sexist and shitty to your favorite artists, they might just get fed up and, like, just walk away. Like, I guess that's a good lesson to learn. But I think this new stuff is, like, is fantastic. Really fantastic.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder why people were so mean to Vivian. I was reading the Tegan and Sarah article, and like the press was pretty mean to Tegan and Sarah too. Like, there's that one famous line about Tegan and Sarah. They got called tampon rock. Can you imagine someone doing that today? They would get crucified, which that you should.
Yeah, they'd be rightfully dogpiled on by everyone. Yeah.
Like, but that was only like 6 years ago. You know, like tampon rock. Like, what's up with that? You know, but like. Do either of you have any idea why people were so mean to not people? I mean, it's not people. Like, eight people were so mean to Vivian Girls. You know why?
I mean, it feels weird that even 8 years ago that was. I mean, like, I don't want to talk too much about like current politics or anything like that, but I feel that like 8 years ago was a more enlightened time than right now in some respects. Yeah. So, I don't get how. I don't get how we've matured away from that kind of thing. I mean, like, I'm glad if we have, but like eight years ago still feels very current in my mind. I don't know.
But 8 years ago is like pre Me Too. It's pre, you know, like, and I feel like, yeah, like things, the ground has really shifted under our feet in the last few years in terms of like how you're allowed to, or not allowed, but you know, how people would like you to talk about women, view women's work, hire women. I mean, all of this, you know, like, don't you feel like it is a different world from 8 years ago?
From that standpoint, it's just that like, I feel that like 8 years ago, calling a band with, you know, prominent female identifying members tampon rock would be really fucking heinous even then.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get how that was ever like a valid line of criticism, you know, in the modern era. Like, I don't get how that got past anyone's, like, you know, I'm being a total dick filter that you would have to run things by.
Adam, that was kind of a famous thing. Do you know what website that was off or on?
No, I want to know.
Pitchfork. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Hmm.
No, I know what you're saying, though. Yes, 8 years ago, people should have known better. But it's like, but yeah, now it's like you can't get away with it in the same way, you know?
I don't know. Well, regardless of reason, it's good that we're not there anymore and that Vivian Girls is back. So... Yeah. Do you want to hop right into a song then, or?
Well, actually, I want to talk about Vivian Girls briefly more. And then we'll go ahead. With the Vivian, do you all think are they here to stay? You know, do you guys think they got the reception they were hoping to get? I mean, I'd love for the Vivian Girls to keep putting out stuff. They said they're going to start working on a new album, but you know, comeback albums are always difficult, and it's kind of hard to do phase. Not many bands have successfully done phase two of a career. Some have, but not that many. Do you guys think that Vivian Girls are here to stay, and we'll get to enjoy them for another 8 years, or 10 years, or 15 years, or 20 years?
I have a boring answer, and the boring answer would be for bands of their level that have the recognition, but you know aren't necessarily going to be making money, because let's face it, nobody's making money. You can get into a mode where you do a tour a couple times out of a year. You might record every couple of years, every 3 years or so. So you are not from the perspective of like an old style touring band, an active band, but in the 2010s context or whatever you want to call where we are now, you're quote unquote still together. But on the ground, you may not see each other for 6 months between doing anything. And I could absolutely see them being that kind of band where they have their own thing going on. But they'll get back together a few times a year to go do something, and they know that if they will, people will show up. But they're not going to be, you know, playing 40-date tours or anything either. Because you get older, right?
Yeah,
you have lives at that point. How long has it been since their last thing? Was it 8 years, you said?
I think 5 years ago, actually, with their last show.
Right,
so in 2014.
Yeah, so like they weren't just like sitting around for 5 years, right? They were, you know, working jobs and having, you know, relationships and families and whatever else that they have, like normal people do. So you can't just, you know, shelve all that stuff because you're going to be a band again. So it probably becomes a part-time thing.
I think it's almost cool. I mean, if they want to do a 40-date tour, or continue to do that, I think that's great. But I think it's almost cooler if they just sort of come back and are like, hey, we just wanted to make a record, and like just wanted to show that we can still make a freaking amazing record just because we felt like it, you know, like 8 years after our last record. You know, I think it's like almost cooler if they just kind of, I don't know, just put this out and it's great. And sort of what Adam's saying, just kind of move on.
It's a great record. Howie, do you want to play a track?
Yeah. I mean, the video, I can't remember which was the video we were talking about. Oh, was it the one for, well, anyhow, the single that I like is called Six. So that's the song I like to play.
We'll be right back.
And that was the Vivian Girls' excellent, I mean, man, one of the best comeback albums ever, I think. I mean, great radio. Anyways, that about wraps up today's episode. You can always use that podcast at punknews.org. Hallie Bullitt, anything you want the listeners to know about, to do? Any words of wisdom?
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. The new Beyond Burger looks a little bit different, but it's still just as delicious. Oh, also, I tried the Impossible Burger Whopper.
And?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just, maybe I never liked a Whopper to begin with. I think if you liked, I think if you liked a Whopper, you would like the Impossible Burger Whopper. But I like the Impossible Burger Sliders from White Castle, and that's the last thing I'll say.
I've actually wanted to try out the Impossible Whopper myself, which I hope to do soon. Adam White, what's your stance on the Impossible Whopper?
My problem with all this is that all of these like alternative meats came onto the market like right as I am like really deep into my like being Mr. Health Guy kick that I'm on, and none of this stuff is like calorically any different than the meat product. So it's not like I'm like, oh yay, there's an Impossible Whopper now. I can just start like eating Whoppers. And I'm like, no, it's basically the same calorie count as the other thing. So that's not helping you. You don't just get free reign to eat Whoppers. And I was like, oh, all right, never mind then. Never mind. Eat my fucking lettuce.
There you have it. Adam White turning his nose up at the Impossible Whopper. We'll see you next week and reach the podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you next week.